When I started the podcast, the bit before the theme music was an apology for the quality of the recording. Back then, I didn't have a pop filter and my microphone wasn't very good. Since then, I've updated the equipment I use, so I didn't need to do the apology at the start. But recently, I was thinking, well, maybe I should do an apology. So this week, I'd like to apologise for my poor personal hygiene. Run the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, instead of seeing a trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Hello, you beautiful people, and welcome to the Total Christmas Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. I hope you've had a great 2 weeks. I hope you missed me. I hope you were sat curled up in a corner somewhere crying, thinking, I hope he comes back. I don't know how I'll survive these 2 weeks without him. I love him so. That probably happens. I've got a packed show for you. Do you want to do the interactive bit? Do you? Oh, God. Okay, we'll do it, but this is under duress. Ready? All right. Yep. Uh-huh. Yeah. And scene. Well, that was something. Right, so, let's just get on with the show. Here it comes. It's coming right now. I can see it. It's coming. Here it comes. And commence. I haven't got a jingle for this segment. This is like the third or fourth time I've done it. I haven't got a jingle. If you have got time on your hands and you fancy it, why not record a jingle for this segment? I'll probably be inundated with none. But if you do, you know, it saves me having to do one. And then we'll have a jingle for this segment. I should tell you what the segment is, shouldn't I? Because I'm doing it. It's the Guinness World Records segment. And occasionally, I like to find three world records on a topic and I chat about them. And this week, I have three that are all about food. And you're going to have a guess at how big or how small or how large or how old or whatever it is each of these is. Am I making any sense? Okay, the first one is the largest Christmas pudding. Now, in the UK, I don't know what percentage of people have a Christmas pudding. My mum makes a fantastic Christmas pudding. It's glorious, really rich, really strong. And if you like Christmas pudding, well, eat it. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. This is the world's biggest Christmas pudding. And it's funny because on the Guinness World Records website, it says it has like the categories. And it's like you've got who, what, where, and when. And the who is unknown. Because it says the largest Christmas pudding was made by the villagers of Orton in Lancashire. It should just say, instead of unknown, I suppose it should say the villagers of Orton, Lancashire. But it doesn't. So you've got to guess how heavy, it's not size, it's weight. And you've got to guess how heavy that Christmas pudding was. We're going in metric. If you want to go pounds, we can do pounds as well though. Are you ready? The world's largest Christmas pudding ever weighed 3.28 tons. Yeah, or 7,231 pounds and 1 ounce. 3.28 tons of Christmas pudding. So this was unveiled at the famous Orton Pudding Festival in 1992. So that record has stood for 33 years. Now, according to a feature in The Guardian, the pudding was made from 1,000 pounds of raisins, currants, sultanas, carrots, sugar, and suet. I don't like that. I don't like the fact that they've bundled all those in there together. Because sugar is not the same as raisins, currants, and sultanas, is it? If they'd said the raisins, currants, and sultanas as a category, and then the sugar as a category. And suet as well. Suet is like animal fat, although you can get vegetarian suet. So, yeah, I'm not impressed with that. 250 pounds of flour and candied peel. How do you put those two in the same category? That doesn't make sense either. Anyway, 2,250 eggs. I tell you what, that was one tired chicken at the end of that. 35 gallons of milk, 15 gallons of brandy. Well, I would have gone for 20 gallons, but that's them. And 1,500 pounds of other secret ingredients known only to the chief pudding maker, Mitzi Hayhurst, and her mother and festival president, Annie Clark. Instead of unknown, shouldn't it have had their names up in unknown? Anyway, The secret recipe was handed down to Mrs. Clark by her grandmother 70 years before. The mixture was blended for 30 hours in a concrete mixer and steamed in a giant stainless steel vat. What bothers me slightly is the £1,500 of other secret ingredients. What other secret ingredients have you got? What secret ingredient can you put in a pudding that we don't already know about? That's quite a large percentage of the pudding. If this pudding weighed £7,231, that means over 20% of it is some unknown ingredients. She could be chucking anything in there, couldn't she? She'd be chucking in like blocks of lead to weigh it down, to make it heavier. So I'm not that impressed with that. Anyway, though, that's a pretty good pudding. But here's the thing, right? This is the worst bit of the whole fiasco. It's not a fiasco because they got the world record. This is the worst bit, though. Are you ready? What date do you think this pudding was made? Now remember, this is the famous Autumn Pudding Festival. So what date do you reckon it was made? Are you thinking, like, what, mid-December? Are you thinking, oh, well, maybe it's a bit early. Maybe it's, like, maybe it's November. That's a bit early, really. Or maybe you're even thinking, oh, what, could it have been, like, September? No, it was July. The Pudding Festival was held on the 11th of July. And they're calling it a Christmas pudding. I mean, it is a Christmas pudding, but still. It ain't Christmas, is it? July. Wouldn't feel right. It's like, I couldn't really eat a mince pie if it's not at Christmas. I do like mince pies, don't get me wrong. I love mince pies. I don't really fancy them if it's not Christmas. Come Christmas, I've got a craving for them. I need them. I can't live without them. But in the middle of July, I'm like, nah, I don't think I'll bother. Anyway, that was the world's largest Christmas pudding. Interesting one. Now, the next one is the most Brussels sprouts eaten in 1 minute. So this is the deal. You've got to use a cocktail stick to spike the Brussels sprouts, and you're not allowed to spike more than one at a time. You don't have to get four, like a kebab, like a Brussels sprout kebab, like the world's worst ever kebab. You don't have to do that, okay? You've got to do one at a time, spike it with a cocktail stick, pop it in your mouth, spike the next one, cocktail stick, in your mouth. That's what you got to do. He had 1 minute to do it. This chap was called Linus Urbanek in Rottne, in Sweden, on the 26th of November, 2008. My question to you boys and girls is, how many did he eat in 1 minute? You thinking of a number? Think of a number? The answer is 4,000. No, it was 31. Yeah, he's at 31. So that's one every 2 seconds. That's not bad. Now, here's the thing. I thought, right, I'll see if I can find some more information about this. So I googled most Brussels sprouts eaten in 1 minute. And you know what came up? Some other guy, a British guy called Wayne Sherlock. The headline for this, it comes from a website called Kent Online, because it happened in the county of Kent in the UK. And it says, Wayne Sherlock breaks is in inverted commas, breaks world record for number of Brussels sprouts eaten in 1 minute. And he ate 33. Now, here's the deal. They filmed it. So they've got footage of him doing it, and he does do it in less than a minute. But the problem they had was there was no adjudicator there from the Guinness Book of Records. So we don't know. The problem you've got is, it's impressive. You should watch it, actually. Google it and watch the video clip, because he's really quick. Like, the first 20, he's already done in less than 30 seconds. He's flying through them. But then he starts to slow down a little bit as he's, like, trying to chomp them down. But the problem is, because there was no one there from the Guinness World of Records, they can't clarify that he definitely ate them all. And looking at the video, you can't see the size of some of them. And he actually said in an interview that as he was going, he was looking for the smallest ones each time. So I don't know what the Guinness World of Records criteria is. Do they have to be over a certain diameter? I don't know. I'm not sure at all. But they put it to the Guinness World of Records, and they obviously got rejected, because this was a couple of years ago and the world record is still 31. So I guess to find out the full criteria, you'd have to contact the Guinness Book of Records and they'll tell you how big the Brussels have to be and if someone's got to be there to record it. But I reckon someone out there could beat 31, couldn't they? If this guy did 33, then surely you could do 35, because you've got skills, haven't you? Probably. Yeah. Anyway, that was the most Brussels sprouts eaten in a minute. Now, this next one, I like this next one. This next one is the largest Christmas dinner commercially available. I won't lie to you, boys and girls, some of the records on the Guinness Book of Records are really weird. And this one, it's a little bit iffy, really. But this is the largest Christmas dinner commercially available, as in you have to pay for it in a restaurant or pub. And this is a pub. It's called The Duck Inn in Oakenshaw, Worcestershire, in the UK. And it was served by the landlords Ashley and Louise Gargan, and it weighs 9.6 kilograms. That's 21.16 pounds, and it comprises of a turkey. I'm getting, it's quite a small turkey. I mean, as turkeys go, it's a small turkey. It's still a lot of meat. A turkey. It's not sliced. It's not sliced as a turkey. It is a turkey. 25 carrots, 25 parsnips, 25 broccoli florets, 25 cauliflower pieces, 25 roast potatoes, 25 carrots, 25 parsnips, 25 pigs in blankets, and 25 sprouts. And you should see the picture of it. It's ridiculous. It doesn't look like a plate. It looks like a serving platter for a family of five. In total, the dinner amounted to 5,000 calories. Now, this was back in December 2013, so the record has held for nearly 12 years. And if you wanted to buy it back then, it would cost you 35 quid. But if you ate it in less than 45 minutes, you'd get it completely free. And you get a t-shirt and you get your picture put up on the wall. And also, which is kind of nice, each meal that they sold, they'd give the equivalent to a local food bank. Which you've got to respect that. I do respect that. That's pretty good. But think about how much wastage there was. There's a clip online of this guy trying to eat it. And after the 45 minutes are up, he's barely put a dent in it. It's ridiculous. It's just so much there. You could still feed a family of four with what's left on that plate. He wasn't a particularly big guy, this guy that was having a go at it. I'm guessing it was a clip from some local news or something. But here's the thing, right? Listen to this. This is the guy, Ashley Gargan, the one who runs the pub, who sells the roast. Listen to this.
In total, we've done about between 20 and 25. So we need someone like you to come in and do it, which hasn't been done yet. So we definitely wait for someone to come and do it.
Yeah, so no one's done it. And I'm not surprised no one's done it, because it's ridiculous. I used to watch Man vs. Food, where they'd have to eat these huge plates of food. This is much worse than that. I've never saw anything as big as this. I'd like to see anyone compete it, because no one has, clearly. I hope he didn't get too many t-shirts printed up. What was he thinking? Goodness me. Still, I bet they got plenty of publicity out of it, and that's handy. Do you know what? This is a real aside now, boys and girls, a little insight into my life. I actually had a go at one of these Man vs. Food challenges. So back when I used to watch Man vs. Food, I really thought I could do that. I'm quite a slim guy, I won't lie to you. I am quite slim, but I've got a huge appetite. I can really go for it. I remember once we went out for dinner at an Indian restaurant, and I finished mine, and all my mates like couldn't finish theirs, so I polished off everyone. My mate bet me a fiver that I couldn't finish off everyone else's food, and they all just piled it on the plate, and I just carried on through it. I ate every last bit of it, apart from a tiny bit of naan bread, and he gave me the fiver. I was happy about that. But my mate at the time, the one that bet me the fiver, was working with my dad at the time, and the next day he was talking to my dad about it, and my dad turned around and goes, he'd already had his dinner that night, and he went out and had another one. And I'd forgotten I'd had my dinner. Yeah. Anyway, that's by the by. And this next bit's by the by, but I just want to share it with you. I've been watching Man vs. Food, so I wanted to have a go at it. And I went online, I'm looking for places. And there was a place in Bristol, I had a mate who lived in Bristol at the time, where if you ate this burger, it was 20 quid for this burger. If you ate the burger in less than an hour, you got it for free. And I thought I could do that. In the weeks leading up to it, I was eating like huge meals of burgers. I'd buy like a whole pack of burgers, like the really cheap ones, like about 20 burgers, chuck them in a massive loaf of bread and eat that down, that sort of thing. So I was ready for it, you know, getting my stomach ready. The day comes, I had a light breakfast, a very, very light lunch. So I set myself up, you know, big appetite. I get there and they bring this burger out. I'm thinking this will be no problem at all. And I'm not kidding, it was the size of a dinner plate. It was huge, okay, at least 12 inches across. And it sat about 6 inches tall. And the meat itself was about an inch and a half thick. Seriously, an inch and a half thick. And I set about it. And it was the worst tasting burger I've ever had in my life. Not that it tasted particularly bad, but burgers generally taste good. This just was just the blandest, driest. They must have just cooked the crap out of it just to make it so unpalatable. And I'm there eating it thinking, well, this isn't even enjoyable if it was like a quarter of the size or if it is even a fifth of the size. So there's no way I'm going to enjoy it. I'm just going to have to go for it. I don't think I made it more than halfway, to be honest. I can't remember. I remember my wife, Carla, she was amazed I couldn't do it. She's like, I really thought you'd do it. I didn't think for 1 second you wouldn't do it. And I was so disappointed with myself, because mainly I'd spent 20 quid on the worst burger I'd ever eaten. Then the rest of the evening, I was just laying around like with my belly really aching, just laying there going, oh, I wish I'd done that. Oh. And even the next morning, I felt pretty crap as well. For nothing. Yeah, didn't achieve anything that day. Anyway, That's my story about me trying to eat a massive burger, which has got nothing to do with Christmas. But there you go. That was the world's biggest Christmas dinner commercially available. I don't know if they're still doing it 12 years later. Probably not. I bet no one managed it. There we go. That's this episode's segment. If you want to do a jingle for it, email it through. But now we're doing this.
Do you hear what I hear?
Do you hear what I hear?
You know, we like to think positive at the Tiki Bar. Always remember, it's a beer can, not a beer can't. So I was recently looking at Christmas cards, and I found some supporting the Friends Fair Deal charity. These are produced by the Great British Card Company. The proceeds from the sale of these cards are donated to multiple UK-based charities, including the Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, the Soldiers Charity, and Tenevis Cancer Care. What caught my attention was the Santa's Brolly and Friends design. I looked at the card and it depicted Santa holding an umbrella and surrounded by woodland creatures. I was thinking, where's the Brolly? And what is it? My Do You Hear What I Hear alarm was screaming. What I didn't realize is that Brolly is informal slang for umbrella. My first thought was that Brolly doesn't sound anything like umbrella. I also realized that we have nothing in the States comparable to this term. What is a Brolly? It isn't a common word at all. Most Americans wouldn't know what it means unless they'd spend time watching Downton Abbey. Or they might think it sounds like a brand name or some kind of product. The origin of Brolly is a clipped and shortened form of umbrella dating back to around 1870. The term originated in university slang. It comes from the extracted brel in umbrella, and it changed over time to become Brolly. How Brelly became Brolly is unknown, but is likely the result of accents and regional differences. Also, it is thought that maybe Brolly just sounds better than Brelly. The etymology of umbrella stems from the Latin umbra, which later followed by the Italian term umbra, and that translates to shade or shadow. The ending ella, meaning little, creates the term umbella, or literally a little shadow, providing protection against the sun's powerful rays. This was the word the Romans used for a parasol. At some point, the R part of the original Latin stem was reintroduced. It's clear that a Brolly is something that you would use a lot in the UK, given the typical rainy British weather. No matter, it is just clear that in the US, we never really developed a fun slang word like Brolly. Americans just stick to the full word, umbrella. In the same way, we clearly wouldn't say parasol. Brolly for umbrella sounds a bit too whimsical, like something a maiden aunt might say when serving tea and biscuits. Americans like things bigger and plainer. We don't do Brolly because it's too cute. Instead, we like our words like we like our pickup trucks. Big and clunky. Umbrella with three heavy syllables. All I know is Brolly never caught on in America, but maybe we should pronounce it as Brolly instead and say, that is what real men say. Cheers and happy Christmas.
Boys and girls, Bob's son just got married. Congratulations to Bob's son. So, because of that, Bob sent these really late. And he sent it the day before this goes live. Now, I record 3 or 4 days before it goes live. So, I'm recording this before I've received what you just listened to. But I'm sure it's fantastic, because Bob's fantastic. Thanks so much for that, Bob. And congratulations again to your son. Now it's time for this.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle. Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
Boys and girls, if I say a Christmas carol and I say topper, well, instantly you're going to think of one of the guests at Fred's Christmas party, Topper. Well, this is not about one of the guests at Fred's Christmas party. This is a TV show called Topper. Now, it is possible and probable that this was the first ever one of those versions of A Christmas Carol that is an episode of a sitcom where they use the characters of the sitcom in A Christmas Carol. Yeah, I think this is the first one. Not 100% sure, but pretty sure, because this one comes from 1953. It's a TV series called Topper. It was based on, originally from a novel from 1926, a novel called Topper by Thorne Smith. But then in 1937, there was a film made of the novel starring Cary Grant, and it was followed by two sequels, which Cary Grant wasn't in, but the rest of the cast did stay the same apparently. So the TV series was shown on CBS and it ran from October 1953 to July 1955. There was two series and a total of 78 episodes. 78 episodes! That's 39 episodes per season. I needed two seasons. That's a lot of episodes. Now, I'm going to read out the synopsis from Wikipedia, so here it goes. Sophisticated but stuffy Cosmo Topper is the vice president of Citibank, married to sweet but rather clueless Henrietta. They live in a Los Angeles house they bought from the estate of a young couple, George and Marion Kirby. The Kirbys died while skiing when they were buried by an avalanche. A St. Bernard dog, Neil, who attempted to rescue them, also died with them. Topper discovers his new home is haunted by the ghosts of the former occupants as well as Neil. Strangely, he is the only one able to see or hear them. The Kirbys try to bring some excitement and joy into the life of stodgy and conservative Topper. The ghosts cause strange but humorous events to happen, which an embarrassed Cosmo has to try to explain to others, baffled by them. So there you go. Topper lives in a house with a couple of ghosts and their dog. Well, it's not their dog, it's a dog. What's interesting about this TV series, that I had never heard of, by the way, was that a lot of the episodes were written by Stephen Sondheim, the guy who wrote all those famous musicals. He wrote some of this crap. Not all of them, but quite a lot of them. But not this one. I'd like to think it would be a lot better if he had, because it ain't good. But we're going to go through it anyway. So, Topper is played by a gentleman called Leo G. Carroll, and he was in a version of A Christmas Carol. He played Jacob Marley in the 1938 version. Now, I've not covered that one yet. I will at some point, I'm sure. But yeah, so he's got a form already. It starts off with an outside shot of his house, and there's a couple walking past the house in the snow, and then it sort of cuts into the house. Now, this is the thing, right? Now, I'd love to know how much that shot alone cost, because it's only about 10 seconds of these two people walking past, but it's also the only scene that's outdoors. So why'd they even bother? Why not just cut from inside? Because I'm guessing normally it's not snowy outside his house, so they would have had to dress the set with all the stuff. Who cares anyway? I'm not going to bother going into it. Right, Topper is there decorating this tree. They got live in this lovely big old house. He's decorating this tree, and the ghosts are helping him, but the ghosts at this point are invisible. So you just see these baubles floating up and attaching themselves to the tree. And have a listen to this line. This is what the wife says.
Don't put too many green ones together, Marion.
This is red and blue. You must be colorblind.
Right. Now, I love that because it's in black and white. So they could be any colour, those baubles. In fact, I bet they did for a gag. They were using completely different coloured baubles to what colours they were talking about, just to mess with us. The ghosts we mentioned were George and Marion Kirby. They're played by Robert Sterling and Anne Jeffries, and they were a real-life husband and wife team, and a very attractive couple they are, I must say. Very attractive, both of them. You got these baubles floating up in the tree, and then Harriet comes in, and she sees the baubles floating, and going, well, that's incredible, because she can't see the ghosts, obviously. And Topper claims that it's because it's a spruce, and spruce have magnetic branches. Yeah. Then we start hearing carol singers outside. This is really weird, right? There's loads of carol singing. You can hear the carol singing. They open the door and there's just one kid stood there and the carol singing's still going on. So I've no idea what that's all about. And the kid's all wrapped up and he's got his scarf covering nearly all of his face. But he looks like a ninja because his hat's pulled down low and all you can see is his eyes. And the kid's there going, oh, could you spare a few pennies for a poor boy who has to support his mum and his pa? And Scrooge is like, dips in his pocket again. He's like, hang on a minute. He pulls down the kid's scarf and he's like, you're little Tommy Welch. And he says this.
You know, I ought to take you over my knee.
You wouldn't get that nowadays, would you? Goodness me, giving him a good hiding for trying to pick some money off him. But then the ghost's like, oh, don't be so tight. And he gives the kid some coins. And what does the kid do? Pulls out a water pistol and squirts him in the face with it. In the middle of winter, the little git. Unbelievable. He's giving you the money. Unbelievable. Like, it's sure squirt him if he don't give you anything. But if I, oh, who cares? Anyway, so now we learnt earlier, which I didn't mention, Henrietta and Topper are waiting for their guests, Dr. Lang and Thelma, and they're coming around for dinner. I believe this is set at Christmas Eve. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure. So then at this point, we cut to Dr. Lang and Thelma in there, and they've just eaten, and they all sit round the fireplace, and Topper is going to do his yearly readings from A Christmas Carol. So they call Katie the cook through, so she's sitting there as well. So you've got the four of them sat there while Topper stood there and he starts reading the book. He tries to start reading, but then the ghosts start interfering, making little comments. And then his wife, every time he says a line, his wife's trying to explain what's going on to Katie the cook. And Topper gets a bit miffed about all this. And he's like, do you know what? Why don't you read it? And she's like, oh, no, you do it. He's like, no, I want to listen to it. So she starts reading it and Topper falls asleep. So this is now where we get our version of A Christmas Carol starting. This is it, boys and girls. This is it. So it starts off in the bank. And you've got George there, one of the ghosts. He's like a security guard, but he's dressed more like a Christmas toy soldier, you know, like in the Nutcracker. And you've got Marion, his wife, she's doing the ironing like an old washerwoman. And Topper turns to George. He's like, oh, where's Bob Cratchit? And he's like, oh, you locked him in the safe, sir, because he wished one of the customers Merry Christmas. And Topper's like, well, go and get him. While he's gone, he turns to Marion, who's the washerwoman, the other ghost. And he's like, says, oh, you'll be wanting the whole day tomorrow, I expect. To her, rather than to Cratchit. But, well, why have her in the scene, to be honest? But anyway, Cratchit turns up. And he's got these two thick wads of cash hanging out of his pockets. And he took them out of the vault, right? And Scrooge's like, what are you doing with that cash in your pocket? He's like, oh, I wanted to take it home to show to my wife and my child because they've never seen money before. And he says, oh, I was going to bring it back, sir. Which is kind of funny, but at the same time, you don't go taking money without asking, even if you are going to bring it back. So Scrooge or Topper fires him. So then the others leave and we cut back to like modern day or whatever, where Topper's wife is reading from the book while Topper's still nodding off. And this is what she says.
The moment Scrooge's hand was on the lock, a strange voice called him by his name and bade him enter. He obeyed. It was his own room. There was no doubt about that. But it had undergone a surprising transformation.
So Topper's room, he's gone home, his room has transformed. But that doesn't happen until the Ghost of Christmas Present turns up. So why are they doing that now? I've no idea. And it hasn't transformed that much anyway. There's just like, I don't know, some sheets over stuff. It's a bit, who cares? Anyway, there's no Marley. We've got an extra Topper. So Topper is playing himself. And he says, I'm your conscience, not your old dead partner. And his wife comes in, and then this is said.
What are you doing here?
Why, Cosmo, where else should I be? I'm your wife.
Scrooge hasn't got a wife. You must be in the wrong book. Try Oliver Twist.
Yeah, so there's that. And then Katie, the cook, she comes through and she's going off to Bob Cratchit's for dinner. And they have this interaction and it turns out that Topper isn't paying her any money, but he's actually going to cut her salary next year. Have a listen to this.
Well, I like that. And after working myself to the bone and not getting 1 cent for it, not 1 cent.
Ah, I meant to speak to you about that. As of Christmas, I'm cutting your salary.
He is despicable, isn't he, Katie?
You can't cut my salary, Mr. Scrooge. First, there's no salary to cut. And second, I quit.
So then we get the Ghost of Christmas Past. She is played by Marion, one of the ghosts, and you know, she's just wearing white, I guess, with like a little Christmas tree thing on her head. And they go back 25 years to a young Cosmo and Henrietta when they're courting. And for some reason, young Topper keeps saying, so's your old man. Have a listen to it. Have a listen.
Cosmo, you're the cat's pyjamas.
So's your old man. It's Henrietta. It's me.
Well, you were quite a masher in those days.
Oh, Cosmo, you're the berry.
So's your old man.
Quite a conversationalist, too.
Yeah, I don't know why I keep saying that. Not the catchiest phrase. Not as cool as that's what she said. Anyway, so then the wife turns up in the past where Topper is watching a young him and her. And she's like, you said we'd spend all our time together. You said we'd have no money. But we don't spend any time together. And we've got loads of money. So she's like complaining about all the things that have happened. So then we cut back to Henrietta in modern day reading the story. Topper's still asleep. And the quote she's giving is the one that the Ghost of Christmas Present gives at the end. So ever listen to this.
My life upon this globe is very brief, replied the ghost. It ends tonight.
So that annoyed me as well. That it's the Ghost of Christmas Present. Oh, who cares? Anyway, then we get the Ghost of Christmas Present. The Ghost of Christmas Present is played by George, you know, the ghost again. And he is just standing in a big wrapped up box because he's the Ghost of Christmas Present. And that's quite impressive. That could be the first time that that joke was made. Definitely on TV, I'm guessing. So well done for that. And they go to Bob Cratchit's house. Now, here's the thing. Bob Cratchit's house, it looks glorious. They got big chandeliers. They got big candelabras on the fireplace. They got a massive spread of food all laid out. A ridiculous amount of food. Mrs. Cratchit's there with Katie. Because you remember, Katie said she was going around the Cratchits for Christmas dinner. Mrs. Cratchit is played by Thelma. She was their other dinner guest. Do you remember? Because it was the Dr. Lang. And anyway, and she's saying that Bob Cratchit has gone out looking for Tiny Tim. And Martha's like, oh, we're so worried about Tiny Tim. And Katie says, oh, why are you so worried? And Thelma goes, because he wants to grow up to be like Mr. Scrooge. Anyway, then Bob Cratchit comes back in and he's saying, I couldn't find Tiny Tim anywhere. And they're really happy about it. It's like, maybe he won't come back at all. But then he does come back. And Tim comes in crying, saying that they starve him and they treat him really badly. And as he's saying this, he grabs a turkey leg off the table and he's chomping into this turkey leg. And I'm always starving. You never let me eat. And he's chomping through this leg, which is hilarious, I guess. Then his mum's like trying to tell him to calm down. And he starts having a go at her and he pushes her and she hits the table and all the food goes everywhere, all their food. And he runs off and says, I don't want to live here anymore. I'm going to go and live with Mr. Scrooge. And he runs off, and then it cuts back to Scrooge, or Topper, and he is in his house, putting all his chest of drawers and chairs and all his furniture in front of the door, blocking it so that Tiny Tim can't get in, because obviously now he knows Tiny Tim's on his way around. And that's pretty much the end of The Ghost of Christmas Present. Then it cuts back to the reading, and we get The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Annoyingly, they refer to him as the Ghost of Christmas Future. You see that the years ticking by, it comes up on the screen, like the years come by, and it goes to the year 3000. Now, I don't know how long Topper thinks he's going to live for, but that means he's living for another 1050 years. So well done for all that healthy living, Topper. So the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, or Future as they call it, is Neil the dog with a metal helmet on his head, and he can talk. I don't know if the helmet is what helps him talk. And pretty much they have a short conversation about the fact that he can talk now. And that's the end of the scene. And Topper wakes up. So the Ghost of Christmas Future was pointless, really. Which is kind of like the whole episode. I won't lie to you. Yeah, so then he's waking up. He's woken up by Henrietta, his wife. And they all wish each other a Merry Christmas as the bells start chiming. And that makes me think, is this because it's midnight? Is it suddenly Christmas Day? Because if that's the case, what happens next is an interesting bit. Because they're wishing each other a Merry Christmas and we hear carol singers outside. I don't know who's going carol singing at midnight. No idea who that could be. We don't see them anyway. I'll tell you who we do see though. Little Tim. Tiny Tim is on their doorstep because the doorbell rings at midnight. I don't know. Maybe I got the hours wrong. I don't know. Anyway, he comes in, he wants to apologise, and he gives Scrooge a present, and Scrooge opens the present, and it's a catapult. And that's pretty much it, really. Neil barks, and the two ghosts have shrunk down to the size of baubles, pretty much, and they're sitting in the tree, and Topper waves at them, and that's the end. And in the very last bit is you've got Topper, his wife, and then the two ghosts and the dog all sort of just stood there smiling. And it just says, Merry Christmas from us all. And that's it. And boys and girls, it could have been so much better. The whole idea of Topper is pretty much a Christmas carol. You've got a bloke, a businessman, a stuffy old businessman, and you've got the ghosts that are trying to make him a bit more joyful. I'm wondering if old Thorne Smith, the person who wrote the original novel, ripped off the idea of A Christmas Carol. Probably. So, bearing in mind that that's what the whole show is about, surely they could have done a better job, because this was just stupid, really. Ridiculous, the whole thing. None of it made any sense, and I'm glad it's over, really. Although, I'm also glad I watched it. I was surprised by the production values for something so very old, and especially if they're getting through 40 episodes per year, that's pretty good. If you want to check it out, the whole episode's on YouTube, it's about 25 minutes long, and it could be worse, but it could be so, so much better. That was this episode's Christmas Carol. Now let's do this.
Where are you, Christmas? How about Yiwu, China? Yiwu is in urban China, located 186 miles south of Shanghai. It is distinctive for one thing. It is like stepping into a perpetual holiday bazaar. Yiwu has a series of vast halls and is known worldwide as the world's largest wholesale market for Christmas decorations. This is a place where it is Christmas every day. Inside these buildings, there are hundreds of booths with thousands of Christmas things to buy. Yiwu's international trade city is a vast, sprawling maze of aisles crammed with every trinket, bauble, and ornament imaginable, with endless variations of holiday magic like hand-painted ornaments, tinsel, lights, Santa figurines, and nativity sets. It's as if the calendar is always frozen in December. Every stall is a mini winter wonderland, complete with festive music looping faintly in the background. Even the vendors get into the spirit, sometimes dressing as Santa or donning reindeer antlers, adding a playful, whimsical air. You can purchase these items by the dozen, by the hundreds, or even by the container load. Each of these more than 60,000 booths represent a separate business, and they all specialize in a particular product. And it's not just decorations. With more than 1,700,000 different festive items on display. Now, if you know of another global location that offers non-stop Christmas cheer every day, you supply it to Jack, and he'll ship it to me, and we'll tell you where to find Christmas throughout the year.
So again, as I mentioned earlier, I only received this just before the episode came out, so I'm pretty sure Bob did a blinding job just then. He always does. If you're not listening to Bob's podcast, you should do, because his son just got married. That has got nothing to do with why you should listen to it, but you know, we do what we can. It's called Festive Foreign Film Fans. It's really good. I love it. You'll love it too. Now let's do this. This is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz, this is the quiz. Okay, boys and girls, here's the scores from last episode's quiz. I've got to say, I think if you're from the UK, it might have made life a little bit easier for you. With 4 points was Mary Pulte. With 6 points was John Gomez and Barbara Wright. With 7 points, we've got Mark Westcott, Frank Talley, David Ferguson, and Mike Westphal from the Advent Calendar House podcast. That's not the best showing from young Mike. Yeah, done a lot better in the past. But like I say, I think you'd have an edge if you're from the UK. With 8 points, we had Tim Mefford and Jack Unverfirth. With 9 points, Benji Pearson, who's not from the UK, well done Benji, and Gerald Case Blanchard, who scored something stupid like 2 in the last one. Yes, you have redeemed yourself, Gerald. With 10 points, equaling me, we have Martin Goodman, Adam Parker, and Rob Taylor. So well done, you three. Congratulations, you're as clever as I am. Good work. Okay, now let's see how we all fare with this one. And I hate to say it, there's a couple of questions in here that might help if you come from the UK, but don't let that put you off. Question number one. on what day should you take down your Christmas decorations? What day is that? Yeah? Okay. Question number two. This is true or false, and it's easy. Mulled wine usually contains no alcohol. Is that true? Is that false? Next one. Question number... I don't know! Why are you asking me such difficult questions when I'm doing a quiz? In what year did the post office stop delivering letters on Christmas Day in England, Wales and Northern Ireland? Which suggests in Scotland you could still get your post delivered on Christmas Day. Now, I don't want the exact year, I just want the decade. If you can tell me the decade, I'll say well done. Next one. What do you traditionally pour on a Christmas pudding to set it alight? Now, it's not petrol, okay? It's a type of alcohol. So if you just say alcohol or an alcoholic beverage, you ain't getting it. I want the type of alcohol, okay? Goodness me. Next one. Who was the first British monarch to make a Christmas Day broadcast? Now, again, I'm not going to be too difficult with this, okay? If you give me his first name, I'll be happy. You can't just say Mr. King or Mrs. Queen, depends on who you think it was, but I want their name. So say it was like King Henry VIII. Obviously, it wasn't King Henry VIII, but if you just put Henry, I'll accept that because I'm generous like that at Christmas. That's my present from me to you. You've unwrapped it 4 months early. Okay, question number whatever. Approximately how many people in the UK watched the Queen's speech in 2021? Now, the answer is to the nearest million. I will let you be 1 million either side of it. So that gives you a spread of 3 to get, okay? And I'll tell you there's between 60 and 70 million people in the UK. Next one. According to a YouGov poll, which vegetable is more popular on Christmas dinner plates in the UK? Is it broccoli or is it Brussels sprouts? Okay? Right then. Next one. What is commonly found on top of a Christingle? Now, I'm hoping you know what a Christingle is. You get it at church service. It's an orange with like a ribbon round it. I'm not going to give away what's on top of it. But if you've ever had one of these, you'll know. Tell me now, what's on top of a Christingle? Next one. How many days after Christmas is Epiphany? Okay. Do you know how many days it is? Good. Or bad. I didn't hear your answer. And the last one, which means it's question number 10. On what year did Boxing Day become a bank holiday in Scotland? Now, again, I'm happy to accept the decade, not the actual year. And I'll also tell you this, it was in the 20th century. So you got a 1 in 10 chance of getting it. Scotland was behind all the other countries in the UK. And I have mentioned this previously on an episode. I remember that. And I mentioned the exact year. So that should help you if you listen attentively. Right, are you ready for the answers? Question number one. On what day should you take down your Christmas decorations? Well, that is the 5th of January. So that's the 12th night. That's when you've got to take them down. All right, get them down. Get them down. Okay, next one. True or false? Mulled wine usually contains no alcohol. Well, that's false, of course, isn't it? What would be the point in drinking it? It's just like you're drinking Ribena if it's got no... Do you get Ribena in your country? It's like blackcurrant squash or blackcurrant cordial. I tell you what, though. Some of the blooming ready-mixed mulled wines I've bought might as well be alcohol-free. They've got like 4%. Was it 4%? The Tesco's one is really naff. And it does just taste like squash. With a tiny little hint of something in it. I'm furious, as you can tell. Okay, question number 3. In what year did the post office stop delivering letters on Christmas Day in England, Wales and Northern Ireland? I went for the 50s. And I can tell you, I was close. It was the 60s. It was actually 1960. So I got that one wrong. Okay. What do you traditionally pour on a Christmas pudding to set it alight? And the answer is brandy. That's an easy one, I think. I'm sure you got that. Next one. Who was the first British monarch to make a Christmas Day broadcast? Well, boys and girls, we've all seen the film The King's Speech. Or at least some of us have. And if you have, you would know that it was King George. King George V. But the reason why I only wanted his first name was because I couldn't remember which number George he was. So I wanted to give myself a point, and I've shared that point with you. Yeah, that was the first British monarch to make a Christmas Day broadcast. That was the radio, of course, not television back then. Okay, next one. Approximately how many people in the UK watched the Queen's speech in 2021? Well, my guess was 8 million. And the answer was 9 million. And I'd already decided to give you a million either side before I read out the question. If you got 8, 9 or 10, you get your point. Congratulations. Next one. According to a YouGov poll, which vegetable is more popular on Christmas dinner plates in the UK, broccoli or sprouts? Well, like an absolute imbecile, I put broccoli. And here's the thing, boys and girls. Every year, I have Brussels sprouts on my Christmas dinner. And every year, my wife and I and family will eat Christmas dinner out somewhere, like, you know, in the build-up to Christmas. We'll have a Christmas dinner, turkey dinner, in a pub or two. Some years it's been more than two or three. It's been four. Maybe it's been five. I don't know. Point being, every single time, they got Brussels sprouts on there. So why did I think, maybe it's broccoli? And I went with broccoli, like a complete fool. I can tell you, it's giving you the stats. 66% of plates have sprouts on them. 44% have broccoli on them. So clearly there's some overlap there, where some people will have both. I can't believe it. I don't know what I was thinking. What a fool I was. What a fool. Okay, what is commonly found on top of a Christingle? Let me tell you a story. When I was a kid, I used to go to Scouts. And every year we go to the Christingle service as the Scouts. Every year you go up, you get your orange, and it's got cocktail sticks on it. On the cocktail sticks, little raisins. And I believe the idea is the orange is the world. It's got a red ribbon around it. That represents the blood of Christ. Then you've got the cocktail sticks with the fruit on. That's like the fruit of the world. And sticking out the top of it is a candle. That was the answer, a candle. And that candle is the light of the world. Jesus, the light of the world. And what we used to do is pull out the cocktail sticks and roast the raisins over the candle when we were cool. That's Christingles. Next one. How many days after Christmas is Epiphany? Well, that is 12 days after, isn't it? Epiphany. Do you know what Epiphany was? That was when the wise men turned up. So, and the last question. In what year did Boxing Day become a bank holiday in Scotland? Well, again, I said I want the decade. And I can actually tell you, boys and girls, this was the year that I was born. And it was 1974. So if you said the 70s, congratulations, you get a point. If you said anything other than the 70s, you don't get nothing. So I tell you what I scored, boys and girls. I got 8. So could have been worse. Could have been better. Clearly, I could have got 2 better. So you know what to do, boys and girls. Email me through your score and let me know how you got on. The email address is totalchristmas@gmail.com. Hope you enjoyed that. Now let's do this. Boys and girls, this episode's recommendation is a podcast called Chain Reactions. Now, this was originally a BBC 4 radio show, but you can get it online now. And the deal is, 1 week, normally it's comedians, 1 week a comedian will interview another comedian, and then the next week, the comedian that was being interviewed interviews another comedian. And so it follows on like that through the series, which I think is a bit of a jip on the people that do the first interview, because they don't actually get the chance to be the interviewee. It doesn't go full circle, and the person who gets interviewed at the end doesn't get to be an interviewer. But it's really interesting learning about these comedians. The only problem is, if you're not in the UK, you might not have heard of a lot of them. So that's the only problem. But I really enjoy it. They're very old, the episodes, actually. I think it started in 2010. And it ran for 7 or 8 seasons. So I'm not sure when it ended. But yeah, if you want to check it out, you should be able to find it on iTunes. It's called Chain Reactions. And I enjoy it. That's this episode's recommendation. And that is it for this episode, boys and girls. I really hope you've enjoyed it. If you want to get in touch, you know what to do. Just email me at totalchristmas@gmail.com or go on the website totalchristmaspodcast.com. I'll be back again in 2 weeks' time. But in the meantime, you know I love ya. Merry, happy Christmas.
And a bah humbug to you.